Hi everyone, with me today is Tim Harvey and Charlie B, Charlie Brennickmeyer. So we've been talking about whether to modify a car or not to modify a car. So that's the topic of today's conversation. We're filming this following on a conversation we were all having this morning, and we thought, hang on, stop, let's record this because it's interesting. Is cars generally, but obviously the topic we're specialising in here is Porsches, but to modify a car or to not modify a car. And the reason why we thought Charlie would be quite interesting to add to it, didn't we, Tim, because of your point of view
questionable taste.
Well, mainly that.
but from the aesthetic side of things, as well as, you know, from my point of view from commercials, and Tim's from, you know, purpose and use and modifying the car for what you're doing with it. So I guess to kick it off, have you modified a car before?
No. The most modified...
I don't believe you. You must have had go faster stripes on your Mini.
No, but if you look at my Forza Horizon count, I don't think there's a single car that's not been tainted in some way. To be honest, I'm torn between modifying and also keeping stuff as stock as possible.
Why?
To a degree, I think there is a certain cars I think can be over modified, and there's also been, I mean, Porsche spent how much money trying to develop a car, and then you see everyone taking a 911 SC and chopping all the bits and pieces off of it and turning it into something it was arguably not supposed to be.
In your opinion.
In my opinion. But then again, at the same time, you know, one guy I know has got a 996 that's slammed on the ground with massive wheels on it, and I also find that very visually appealing. So I would modify something I owned, but I haven't yet, and mainly that's just because I've only had one car, and I don't want to risk the one car being on the floor and broken.
And I guess this touches on sort of the first topic of it, of why you're modifying it, the purpose. So I guess if we go to Tim, goes without saying, but why would you modify a car?
I'll be honest, it's 90% about how the car drives. You know, my wife loves the way a car looks, and that's 99% of her buying or enjoyment of a vehicle is how it looks. For me, I'm actually less fussed about how the car looks, but I'm all about how it drives. So if there's an element of change, I won't call it even necessarily modification, improvement, whatever you want to call it, but there's an element of change that can enhance the driving experience, then I'm up for it.
And I guess that is an interesting point, because within any modern or classic car, actually, Porsche, there can be more that can be unlocked from modifying it.
But it also depends on the individual, because what I might like, somebody else may not like. And that's why, in our case, Porsche produce a car that will suit most of the people most of the time. But no car in its standard form can suit all of the people some of the time.
Well, if you think about it as well, when when Porsche first developed the 911, they were built for people to use and then use as clubman races and, you know, weekend cars. They were built back in the day to be modified. And I guess nowadays, when you look at a car, they offer the standard specification, and I think there's that crazy statistic that there's no two Porsches that come out of the factory the same. But there probably is now. But almost by nature of that, from the off, they've been modified to suit the first owner's preference. And then after that, it's then whatever the car's being used for.
I think it's not just Porsches. Every car brand has a multitude of tuning companies that spawn up around it. For this very point, which is, what Tim's looking for out of a car is going to be different from what you're looking for, from what I'm looking for. There's always going to be that kind of cottage industry that builds up around something. I think what your point was around them, used to leave the factory kind of as a car ready to be modified. You know, I was photographing a GT3R 996 a couple of weeks ago, and that is, for all intents and purposes, a road car that they've just done extra welds on to make it more fortified for the racetrack, but it is part and parcel a road car.
Yeah,
it's got the exact same gear shifter, everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now obviously that's changed, but yeah, I think there's every car is effectively a platform to build whatever someone's personal vision is of what they want it to be.
And I guess that comes onto the subjective part of it, of taste.
Furry dice.
Furry dice.
You love a donk.
Just explain to them what a donk car is. It's great, it's much amusement.
A donk is, there's an actual definition, but it's something with about 28-inch wheels.
With usually rubber band
it's
tires.
Like an old, yeah, it's like an old Caprice, Oldsmobile from a certain, I think it's like the 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
And
just,
nowadays,
just Google donk car.
Yeah. Tim's not necessarily a fan.
No. Not the sort of mods I'd like. Certainly not performance enhancing mods, are they? They are purely aesthetics
but
for very limited
number. They do about
10 second quarter miles. Oh, okay.
Which,
that's pretty good.
For a car with 28-inch wheels and...
Yeah.
But the catch is you have to be in it, and someone will see you driving
and
that
and
car.
The other catch is they don't stop or go around corners.
No. No American cars do, but that's fine.
So, yeah, you've got the subject of taste, and that in then itself is a sort of a sub-topic, because every man and woman is different on what they like. So, I guess when you go back to our initial point of to modify or not to modify, it's obviously just, it's a personal opinion on your own car. And the tricky part of that, then the next step on from that is, you know, people always wonder, well, you know, what's it going to be like in terms of, you know, future value or resale?
Well, that's where you come in, isn't it? Because you buy and sell them all the time.
Well, it's tricky because you have a personal opinion and a commercial opinion, and not all the time they're both the same. But sometimes they will always differentiate. And you know, I've got an older Porsche. I know that the mods that I want to do to it might make it more saleable or attractive, but won't necessarily add any intrinsic value to the car.
Right.
Apart from to you personally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then that's the decision. All of us have to make on the mods versus the cost, and am I prepared to accept that it's not going to add any value?
There are very few. I mean, I've modified all of my cars all the time.
And just to be clear, some of it for performance, though, none of them are.
No, to be fair, some of it is aesthetic. I've put carbon fibre spoilers and bits and bobs on, or changed wheels, or... No, they're door handles. Most of them come from China and don't fit, so don't go down that route. But, yeah, I've modified cars all the time, and it's a personal thing. I don't expect to add any value, because somebody else may not necessarily like those modifications.
Mm.
But it's part of making the car mine, and when I walk into the car park, I know that's my car. It's not like every other Porsche, BMW that came off the production line, it's my car. And that's what I think individualization is all about.
Yes.
And I certainly don't expect to get the money back that I've put into those changes.
But in the word you used when we were chatting upstairs, I think hit the nail on the head, is it's the passion for the car, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so when you look at if you're just looking at things from a commercial point of view, buying and selling them, you wouldn't do it. But that's not why someone...
If you have any
car,
pride of ownership in your car, then it's natural to want to individualise it a bit.
And make it better.
Well, just make it more yours.
Mm.
That's why, because you're having that... Yeah. You're extending that passion into the car.
That's with most things. I mean, even just down to people's phone cases and wallpapers and stuff they do. People modify or personalise that with the most visual representation of who you are being what you drive.
Yeah.
To an extent.
Yeah.
And to a different kind of person.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense that you would want to
just remind us what you drive at the moment, Charlie.
I drive an Audi A4 Avant with KW
Quattro.
Suspension, Quattro, 1.8 turbo, manual.
So that's modified.
It's actually quite low.
It is.
It's quite low.
It is, and that is a natural extension of your personality, isn't it?
What, low?
It
It's but you swapped from a much more modern car into that, and you liked this car more.
I used to have an A45 that I had specifically searched for the non-aero pack version. Mm. So I guess modded back to standard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And swapping into the A4, that is, it's far better going around corners because it's set up better. Mm-hmm. It's far more practical, and it means I can put some money into, say, a 944 at some point.
Which, you know, coming soon.
Which will be on the ground, big wheels. Yeah. All the things you love.
Yeah. So it goes down to car type as well, then, really, when you're talking about to modify or not. Because...
I mean, you must see that as well, with different cars that will come in.
Mm.
Certain mods will be more desired. Things like the GT4 with the gearing ratios and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. You know, that modification, if we took that specifically without, you know, trying to plug something we sell, but that modification is one that, from the off, you know, journalists, owners all wanted.
Mm.
I suppose the balance is that it's not a cheap modification, and once you've done it, it's not the sort of mod you're going to ever undo. You could you could undo, but you know, given the costs involved, you wouldn't. So at that point, that car's not going to be eligible really for a manufacturer's warranty, if that was what somebody was after. But if you were looking for a GT4 to do track days in, it's no surprise the one that we just had for sale that was obviously above the rest of the market because of that mod.
Right.
Not by the entire modification value, but it sold within a week. So certain cars, and in particular our world, certain Porsches are favoured to be modded and accepted almost, whereas others not. So, you know, we don't really deal with the pre-73 cars, but I would put a fair chunk of money on a modified 27 RS. It's probably going to be a trickier proposition than, you know, something which we do sell, like a modded 996 GT3. People would go, I guess
the age of it also dictates how much people want it to be pure, and also how much people love it. I mean, 996s are one of those cars where I think for the longest time people felt you could do anything to them because the value of them was arguably lower than any other generation of 911.
That's a very good point, yeah.
So you could get away with, but you could do these tweaks and not really, the values were already where they were.
So you can get into
something and mess around with it a bit more.
No backlash from the purists. It's a fair point. And I suppose there are certain models over the years that have gone through that, like 964s. Mm. You know, I remember selling them at 10k and everyone would modify them because they're like, well, whatever. I just want to go really fast and enjoy the driving experience. And now they've come up to the value they're at, people accept a modified 6.4 without worrying about it. But if you had a modified 993 C2S, which is quite a collectible car, it falls back into that.
Does it also follow that if it's a very expensive variety of the car, that you're going to struggle if you've modified it to sell it?
Not necessarily, no. Because I suppose any price point is relative to that person's, you know, personal circumstances. So, you know, a 996 at 10k with some mods on it might be the same to a guy that puts 150k into an RS or whatever and then decides to mod it. But I think it goes back to purpose, because if someone wanted to have the ultimate Porsche track car and they found one that had the right, and come onto that, the right modifications to it, like the GT4, it gets snapped up quite quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's there, it's ready, I can go and use it
someone
straight away.
Someone can basically jump the queue of having all the... Someone's done all the work for you.
Yes.
Getting it to that point.
Mm.
And now you can just take it and enjoy it.
Yeah. It's a tricky one, because we'll probably get it outside of our professional lives. You know, you're at the pub or you're wherever, and people ask you opinions of cars and mods and values. And I quite like sort of being the enthusiast, not being the
car salesman.
I think it's true because the reason I got into this, and we all probably got into this in various ways, because we love cars. So if someone was to ask me in the pub about it, I'd be like yeah, that sounds really cool. But then it comes down to what I just touched on what the right mods, because we've all seen questionable quality of part.
Yeah, yeah, and this is why where the buyer has to be really discerning, really discerning.
Yeah,
you've got to do your research. Don't just go and buy the cheapest, the first thing you see, or
the AliExpress store handles.
The first thing some internet warrior has said is right, because they're probably only 10 and have never driven a car, but they're giving their opinion. But so you can edit that out if you need to. But you need to do your research, you know, it actually is a minefield when you go out there. If you just say, right, I want to put some improved coilover shock absorbers on my car, it's a minefield when you go out there looking, because you can't look at a shock absorber and tell whether it's any better than another one. So you do need to do your research. I would generally say you get what you pay for.
Yeah, and with suspension,
when it comes to performance items, that really is the case. But got to do your research.
And I echo that 100%, because you, maybe not with Porsches, but I've seen with other brands, maybe like the Audis, for example, you find on eBay all sorts of suspension for, like, I look at it and I'm like, is that for one? Like, shock? And then it's for all four, and you're like, good Lord.
Yeah.
And to the average, and I don't mean that in any disparaging way, but to the average person who goes, I just want it lower. Why would I spend that value plus $3,000?
Yeah,
I think it's, to that point, I think there's also a conversation to be had about doing your research, but then also doing your research on who fits it, because the amount of times you see people who've lowered a car, bigger wheels, different tires, and then you ask them if they've done anything with the brakes, geometry setup, none of that. I mean, they may not know, care, but the geometry on that is going to be all off.
Yeah.
So this goes back to doing your research on not only what the part is, but who's fitting it and how are they fitting it.
And what R&D has gone into the actual product, because no end of times I see, maybe not Porsches, but performance cars going around and they've got like a great big number plate over the intake, and I'm thinking, where is the logic here?
Or people will fit great big spacers on the front wheels of their car, just to make it look visually better to them, but they won't reset the geometry or do anything after they've done that.
Or you know, one of the trickiest things that I have, and Ollie probably as well, on the engineering side, is when someone has a middle-aged car, so you know, it's 10 or 15 year old Porsche, and they want to make it lower, which is cool, I understand that, they look cooler when they're sat a bit lower, and they're sometimes a bit sort of at first a bit perplexed at when they say, can we just fit lowering springs? And I go, well, you could, but the correct engineering solution isn't to do that. Because what you've got there is you've got, let's say it's a 2005 997 C2S. So it's at a value where they're affordable to a fair few people, still a lot of money, obviously, and then they're quite a modifiable car. So then to say to someone, if you took those springs off and put some other ones on, the problem is you've got a damper there that's done its life. The oil in the damper is old, it's corroded. Yes, we can take it out and put another one on, and it'd be easy to just go, yeah, cool, we'll do that for you, sir. But the trickier conversation is to go, the reason why we can't do that, and then is explaining it, and unfortunately the best way to do it is with a coilover.
But I think the best expensive example of that is the Audi. In the sense that...
All roads lead back to Audi.
But in the sense that it... Versus the A45, which was lower, had better sport suspension, faster, whatever. That is much comfier to drive in, and it can also take corners a hell of a lot faster because the suspension that's there is just set up properly.
It's
not just lower than the A45. It's lower and then also set up in a way that actually just makes it better to drive. You know, it's comfier going down roads, but then it's also, I can hold speed into corners a lot more than I could with the smaller pocket rocket.
Going back to your sort of older cars, dampers are knackered. That for me is an excellent point at which to put something different on the car. A lot of people would say, well, why don't you just buy some OE replacement standard springs and dampers? My argument would be, well, that's the ideal time, unless you're trying to just keep originality completely. That will be the time to actually optimize the suspension, that opportunity for you to make it better for you.
And I was literally going to say the same thing. Yeah. And the other reason for doing that is that sometimes it's a misconception that replacing with OE versus modified, yeah, you're going to be A, more expensive, and often it's marginally more expensive to go to modified. But also you're getting something that's 15 years newer in its design. So when someone, I explained to, I had a very good customer who wanted his 996 turbo suspension sorted, and we looked at the various merits of both, and he said to me, looked me in the eye, said, if that car is harder when it comes back, we're going to have problems.
All right.
And I said, it'll be fine. Because that suspension could be run softer than factory, or harder than factory, or lower or higher than factory, you've got the option to adjust it. Yeah. And when he had it back, he said, oh, there's some of the squeaks that were in the car, you know, 17-year-old, 16-year-old car, whatever it was, some of the squeaks that were in there have gone. Why? I said, well, it's just, it's newer, it's better, it's not quite so harsh. Yeah. So modifying, like you just said, it doesn't necessarily mean you're making it more aggressive or more track focused. It's just improving it for current standards almost sometimes. And
I think the other thing I was going to say is, you know, going back to performance, but no one ever races a bog standard car. You know, the days when you sort of took a car out of a showroom, took the number plates off and raced it, you know, that just, that doesn't happen, but you just wouldn't now. The minimum that you would do would be to put some high performance brake pads in, probably change the brake fluid, and then you go on to different elements of performance. And that just, and people, the reason people do that is because there is a benefit.
Yeah.
So when people say the car is at its best as it left the factory, it doesn't relate necessarily to pure performance, because that car's left the factory, the brake pads are expected to do 25,000 miles or whatever, 20,000 miles, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's compromises all the way down the line. Mm. And so for pure performance point of view, yes, you can improve on what is perceived as being a high-performance, perfect car that someone spent millions of pounds developing.
Because there's very few, sorry Charles, there's very, very few cars that are built without budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the ultimate 911.
But I think the conversation will still come down to how old a car is. Because if you are effectively restoring a 996 or something, you can then go, actually, yes, I will replace the suspension with something newer, maybe a bit more sophisticated. But if you're replacing the suspension on a 2.7 RS, it's a whole different conversation, because that's now...
The imperfection is what people want on that sort of car. They want
the originality. They want it as original as possible. And I think, I don't know what the cutoff point is, but there is a point in time when it kind of ticks over and goes, no, as it left the factory is what's... But then again, that's the value of the car, but someone may decide that they drive the 2.7 RS every day, they want to swap it out and keep the actual suspension kind of on a shelf, and then put it in something else and cruise around with that.
Yeah.
But then again, it all depends on what the value of the car is to someone, how much they use it, any of that kind of stuff.
But I would guess, that even some of those cars have aspects of the car that has been modified, like tyres. Modern tyre is far better than a tyre 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Or, for example, on a 996, you know, they had inherent flaws in the car when they were built, which Porsche themselves fixed, and then aftermarket people came with a solution too. So the infamous IMS bearing, which we won't get into of all the intricacies of that, but if you were going to do a clutch and replace that bearing, modifying it is a absolute no-brainer. Yeah. In fact, I don't think we would let someone put.
No,
you know, it's just, you know. So again, I suppose that touching on purpose to a certain degree, but it's almost like a running restoration on that sort of car, isn't it? To future-proof it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you'd be hard pressed nowadays to find any kind of classic race car, or even, well, actually any race car that's all matching numbers and everything as it left the factory to go to the first race. Cause...
I'm about to go and race at Goodwood in the Speed Week, and I can guarantee you the cars racing there will be 5 to 10 seconds a lap faster than they ever were in period. So there you go.
That's an interesting point in terms of sort of modifying originality, because race cars get crashed. They are tools for people to further their career, ultimately. And there's some people get attached to them, some people don't. But you see sometimes you've got a race car that's got its original shell and then ones that you see advertised with new shells. What's the preference? I guess new shell, it must be.
Yeah, because unless it's a very valuable... If it's a very valuable race car, then obviously originality is key, even though that shell, if you like, might be weak and flexing and all the rest of it. It is the original shell that had whatever results that car had. The moment you reshell a race car, it's basically a new car. And performance-wise, that would be better. Yeah. But
the race car thing sometimes makes me smile, because people say it's totally original race car, but if it's
Trigger's broom.
But even when they were brand new, they then modified them throughout the season into the next season. Yeah. Then the question is, what was actually original?
Well, you just need to look at any of the cars that went into Le Mans. The brake disc that they went in with were dropped after about 4 hours. So that's not... got none of the original parts that it went in with 24 hours before.
The reality is you can rebuild a racing car around the chassis plate. Because that's the only thing that has any value. So when you race a £5 million car at Goodwood and people say, aren't you worried about doing £5 million worth of damage? The answer is you can't do £5 million worth
of
damage.
You can never write it off.
You can't write it off because every mechanical part can be rebuilt. Yeah. It wouldn't cost that much. Mm. So the only valuable bit is that chassis plate.
So just hang on to that.
Which is why there are more E-types and Lotus Cortinas running around now than there ever were ever made.
Was back in the day. Yeah.
So we've talked about modifying Porsches. Another, and I don't really know what my feelings are on this, but I'd be interested to hear you guys, is replicas.
I think fantastic. I couldn't ever afford to buy a genuine original 2.7 Carrera, but I would love a replica which is 99.9% of the same car, and I could enjoy it and just enjoy what an air-cooled 2.7 RS would have felt like, but I could never afford the real thing.
Or even if you could, without the conscience of
worrying about it.
Crashing it. What about you, Charlie?
To be honest, I agree wholeheartedly. I see that there's value in... So I shoot for a couple of racing series where they have a no replica rule.
Yeah.
And that's just to keep things as in period as possible. Mm. Any modifications, to your point about reshelling a car, any modifications done to the car need to have been in period or the same as they would have been able to do in period.
Yeah.
So they're very strict on that. But I think there's also a lot of value in... I would rather see someone with a 2.7 RS smoking it through the rain and getting it, getting the back out and all the back on, than I would seeing a genuine one that's done 700 miles and is sitting in someone's shed.
Yeah.
That to me has no... I'd rather see a fake, or fake real thing going about and driving than I would the ultimate real thing hiding in a corner.
Yeah. I agree.
But you've also got, does it matter? Because if the driver is getting that experience, if it is or isn't authentic, and they are getting the buzz out of it, and they are enjoying that, they're all cars, they've all got four wheels.
There's someone I know who's got a 2.7 RS, and every time he pulls up at an event with the car, someone just assumes it's a replica.
Yeah.
To which point he goes, yes, it is, because he's of no interest to impress someone with the fact that it's original and he drives it.
But he knows,
and he drives it, and he enjoys it. He doesn't really care if anyone else knows.
To be honest, though,
or is bothered.
The only reason people ask that question is because there are obviously more replicas than there are real ones. Mm-hmm. But when they ask that question, they'd actually like it to be real. Because then they could see a real one.
Yeah.
But it's the amount of times, I think, that he's then said it's real and someone's gone,
no, it's not.
But that was different on the... And at which point...
Yeah. But he has the pleasure of... That's the one thing you can't obviously buy with a replica, is the pleasure of knowing
you have the genuine
article.
And when on the odd occasion that you have sort of driven significant cars in Porsche's history, it's not whether it's a replica or it's a real one, but when you're sat in the driver's seat and you're like changing gear, you're like, oh, this thing's seen some sights over the years, you know, old racing cars, you're like, wow, if only the car could tell stories. And that, you can't really put a value or an emotion on that. It's just it makes it more of an interesting car, I suppose, isn't it, that it's won something.
That's why I think places like Goodwood and Revival are so important. It's because, I mean, I would have never been able to see actual E-types, C-types, D-types racing in period.
Yeah.
But now I can, and they also, they properly race them. No one's holding back with anything.
Well, they're called continuation cars, which is a great, great name. I mean, I raced the GT40 at Goodwood a few years ago when they had a GT40 celebration race.
Yeah.
And there were 32 cars on the grid, and I think only three of them were original cars. But they're proper GT40s,
yeah.
You know, and with Gelsco chassis and everything else.
And no one in the crowd's worried about that. No, they're like, these guys are going for
They sound great, look great.
And a lot of the owners actually had done replicas, continuation cars of their actual original cars that they had at home.
Yeah.
So they could enjoy racing them.
Yeah, I mean, that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. So,
I mean, if you had the money lying around.
Yeah. So let's add some kind of conclusion to our initial question of to modify or not to modify. I think.
Modify.
The answer is obvious. We're all on the same page. There are some caveats to that, though, in terms of quality, taste, which is a little bit more subjective.
Yeah, I think my opinion has always been, if someone is passionate about any particular look, scene, modification, I mean, from my point of view as a photographer, it's kind of my job, I guess, to understand why.
Yeah.
And to, like, if someone else loves it as much as they do, then it should be my job to kind of find out and understand why they love it so much, rather than just immediately go, it's not for me, I'm not about it.
I think that's
quite like a donk.
That's a really good observation, because the enthusiast in me is kind of the same. There are things that I see and I go, it's not for me, but I'm glad someone's done it.
Well, someone had to have the brainwave of going, well, actually, if we just take a 964 and put a safari kit on it, we can start to rally these things, do the East African rally all over again.
Yeah.
You know, but someone had to do it, and there will have been all the purists going,
I'm not sure you should have done that. I've never driven one, but I bet they're able to drive in the right environment. Well, I hope everyone found that short little topic interesting, something that turned from a coffee break chat to
let's actually record.
The best ideas do.
Absolutely. And as always, if you found that interesting, let us know. And likewise, if there's any other topics and you'd like to see Charlie back, let us know. And we'll have a listen.